Off the ball. Rugby.
When you come across a gem, you keep him. We talk about Brice Toulon. I don't look upon him as a player. It's very rare you could say in modern sport, really, that he's a good friend.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Making her off the ball breakfast debut, it's the journalist, broadcaster and podcaster extraordinaire and Galway's own Megan Scully.
Gurmeel Maga, it's delighted to be here with you both. Really looking forward to the show this morning. Trying to get myself all organised and set up and get enough coffee into my system, but I think we're good.
Two Connacht people in one room, the Stuart Lancaster effect is already in place.
Do you know what? I have been speaking to quite a lot of Connacht fans. Actually, before this was even announced, I was covering some of the Connacht games, the home games, and, obviously it wasn't a great season, and chatting to some actually family of players and to season ticket holders who've been there for years, and everyone's saying, not a great season now. And I actually said to them, I was like, do you know what? Can only get better from here. Like, it's only going to go up. And then they announced Stuart Lancaster. And I have to say, the excitement, we've seen it on social media, but just even chatting to people and talking to various people, it's just really lifted everyone.
Yeah.
And it's really lifted the mood. And I think people outside of Connacht who aren't Connacht fans are also happy for Connacht. I hope they are. I think it's a massive boost for the province and everyone already is so excited. And then with the new Dexcom Stadium as well, it just feels like there's something coming again to Connacht after we saw the Pat Lam effect and what that did for the province. And in terms of boosting rugby in Connacht, because I think there was such a heavy emphasis on GAA for so many years around with between Mayo and Galway and obviously the other counties. But I think that year when we won the Pro 12 at the time, actually, I was over at it. It was so much fun. And a few days afterwards around Galway City were just brilliant.
Yeah.
And the boost it brought and the amount of young people have got into the sport. So I think it's just good for the sport.
Yeah, that's 9 years ago already. Like, it's hard to imagine.
Oh my God,
what's changed or how much has changed for them. And like, even to start the last season, Connacht were looking good. Like, they were, like, even the match against Munster, that really tight game.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of petered out.
Do you know what, though? I think when it's a derby, it's always incredible. I think Connacht Munster, it's probably one of my favourite games in terms of derby games because I love the two fans coming together. I obviously lived in Limerick for 8 years, so I was there with Munster a lot as well. So I just love when the two sides meet because it's always great fun and it's always such a good battle because I don't think you can ever really separate the sides coming into it, no matter where they are on the table. I just think when they get there, it's just, it's always, something good always happens.
Oh, look, while it's your first Off the Ball breakfast appearance, you have done work for Off the Ball before. You're on the Sunday Paper Review and you cover the Women's Six Nations for us too on Off the Ball. And even talking about the Women's Six Nations, it was like that kind of ended in a bit of disappointment because it started so well.
Yeah.
In that, like individually, it was an amazing tournament for like Aoife Wafer. It was incredible. And there were good performances and the first half against England was good. But there was still that little bit of disappointment from it. And then in the men's game as well, as the season drew to a close, there was a kind of, despite Ireland being like, essentially one of the best countries in the world at a sport, which is very uncomfortable for an Irish psyche to be the best at anything.
Yeah.
But it was at the same time, what coincided with that was like, where is rugby going internally? And we had this conversation yesterday, Megan, on the show with Adrian as well. It was like, it did feel a lot like the emphasis and onus and responsibility was on Leinster and it was up to the other three to catch up. And it just feels like this one appointment, just one person, can actually have such a significant effect to lift everyone else.
Absolutely. And as well, I think, if I'm right in saying this, one of the social media team from Connacht Rugby said that post about Stuart Lancaster has been like their most popular and biggest post to date. I think it surpassed their like year targets and everything. And which just shows what it means to people. And I think some people are kind of complaining saying, why didn't he go to Munster? Why did he choose Connacht? And then I actually heard an interview with him where he was saying that he's from Cumbria, is it? And it's like farming kind of rural area and it's coastal and he reckons it's not too far off what Galway will be like. And I think it was Jerry Thornley was talking about it yesterday as well, and his family are coming over. And I just think it'll be a great addition. Like, Galway's a big town, effectively. Like, if you live in Galway, you end up knowing everyone and we're all very, close-knit. So I just think I already can envision him like walking down Quay Street and, everyone be like, how's Stuart? I just think he's going to really become part of the fabric that is not just Connacht, but I think Galway as well. And I feel like he's like no more than like when Pat Lam was there, he really bought into the whole area as well. And I just think it's going to, yeah, I'm already looking around for tickets. It's like, right, need to get tickets to every home game, need to get a season ticket, need to make sure we have tickets. And I think already it's going to be a scramble because I know that there's been kind of, I guess, issues around ticketing because people are like, before they even announced Stuart, a lot of people want to get a season ticket with the new stadium because people want to, like I've been in there now and it is phenomenal. And even when you're driving up College Road and you can see it and it's going to be, it's going to be so good for the city. It's going to be such an addition. So yeah, I'm putting my money on Connacht now.
This video you were talking about was Stuart Lancaster holding the camera, wearing the Connacht training top, you know, walking around the pitch. And it was like, I needed to see that to believe it, that it actually happened. You know, I heard the announcement and I was like, oh, this is amazing. But I thought, no, I need to see the guy walking around in Connacht gear for this to be a real thing. Because, like, we were saying it yesterday and regular viewers and listeners will be aware that Stuart Lancaster was on the show with us just a few weeks ago.
I saw.
And it was just the idea that, like, he was in line for the Australia job after leaving Racing job, two really high-profile gigs. And it was a question of, like, where's Stuart Lancaster going to go next? And you're thinking, well, Leo Cullen's not going anywhere, so he's not coming to Ireland. Like that felt like it was such a big deal. And it will be so interesting to see the players that he's able to recruit now.
Because I think with his Leinster and with Racing as well. Now, I'm just going to throw an absolute curveball out here now because there's been a name that's been thrown around I've seen and I'm just wondering, could we ever see him coming over to this side, over to Ireland? Owen Farrell?
Listen, Stuart's opened the gate, like he's opened the proverbial gate for people to join him.
I mean, I'm just here going, like his father loves Ireland, his children love Ireland. They've been seen in the Aviva Stadium wearing their Irish jerseys.
Yeah.
It's like, not impossible.
Now, unless he has a preference for his own son for Dan to come over.
A big old salary.
Huge.
But
with each passing year, that salary will go down. You know, you get cynical with it and it was like, yeah, even leave a goal like 6 to 12 months. Because, like, for Owen Farrell, like, it hasn't been a wild success in France.
No.
For various reasons, like, for injury. And then his team weren't playing well either and his own form was questionable. If you would ask me that question 48 hours ago, I would have obviously laughed you out of town. But that's what I mean about the pull factor of this one individual. Like, it is amazing. We had James Tracy on the show yesterday who played under him at Leinster. And just to hear the first-hand account of the intensity and motivational ability of Lancaster. And we had heard this when like he was out of work or in work in France. He was still being mentioned in hushed tones. And you know, we have a YouTube channel, Megan, which I'm sure you're aware of, which has very strong opinions, varying. I wouldn't say agreement is generally a common theme.
Okay.
But when the Lancaster news was announced, I think everyone was celebrating on behalf of Irish rugby.
This is what I think. That's what I say. I don't think anyone's begrudging Connacht right now. Maybe some Munster fans might be kind of wondering.
Ah, well, I'm gutted, for sure.
See, that there may be, but I think overall you can't begrudge Connacht. I think everyone is like, you know what? This is great to see because I guess with Leinster, we've seen time in, time out, all these incredible players that have been brought in from all over the world. And I think everyone else, all the other provinces were kind of, even like, I was kind of going, what about everyone else? Like, what's everyone else going to get? And then I think, yeah, Stuart's just brought this whole new level now. And I really think, I've already read an article this morning saying that he's already looking towards Champions Cup. So he's only there for 2 years. So that's a lot to do in 2 years, but we've seen what's happened before with Connacht.
Yeah, yeah. So year one, win the Challenge Cup.
All right.
Year two, win the Champions Cup. And I'll see you later, lads. Thanks for that. Is it going to be enough? Because you've had time to sleep on this. I asked you this yesterday, so I'll ask you this again. Connacht rugby fandom, is it in your future?
Me?
Yeah.
No. Like, don't be doing that to me. Like, Ireland rugby fandom is not in my present.
But what about this? What about the Lancaster?
I wish him well. Like, it's not. He doesn't need me.
I wish him no immediate harm.
He doesn't need me. I wish him well as a professional.
He'll grab you, yes.
But I don't. Yeah, it's not. Anyway, it's not for me, but. I don't even bring the tone down like that.
I tell you what is for you. OTB Breakfast at UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like the USA, choose us to help you get back in action. I have an easy one here for you, Megan.
Oh.
Who will go further in the championship this year, the Galway Hurlers or the Galway Footballers?
Oh, it's like asking me who's my favourite child. Not that I have children, but if I did. you're going to land me in trouble now. You're going to get me into big trouble here. I am going to say... I'm going to say Galway footballers, even though I do now live in hurling country.
Okay.
Did live in football country. But I'm going to go, if I had to put my money on it right now, I'm going to go with the hurlers. Footballers. Sorry, not the hurlers. Sorry, hurlers. Sorry.
What about the footballers? They're kind of stalling a bit.
I just think there's a lot, you know, Pork Joy's been there for a couple of years now, and I think it's time for us to get what we deserved. I think last year we probably left behind, but I think this year now I've got that belief in us. Like I was in, I think like last year, no more than we were talking earlier about the different like Munster Championship and the hurling. With the football last year, I was in Croke Park when we played Dublin, and that, I suppose in some senses, that was almost treated like an All-Ireland final, which maybe it shouldn't have been. Maybe we kind of don't count your chickens before they hatch kind of job. But I remember the feeling inside in Croke Park that day, and then just the atmosphere, and I was surrounded by Dublin fans and they were very vocal, and I remember being like kind of almost afraid to cheer, so I was kind of going, come on, yes. And then next minute, obviously Galway started going ahead, and then I just couldn't contain myself, so I was up on the chair and I was jumping and we were shouting and we were roaring on. And then afterwards the fan beside me like tapped me on the shoulder and he turned around and he gave me the biggest hug and he said, well done. He goes, I'm backing you now, I'm with you the whole way. And I was like, thank you so much. And then the fans behind me started tapping me, were like shaking my hand. You'd swear I played like and scored like some winning point or something. But like that's what I think that day, I think the Dublin fans got behind us, and I remember walking back then and getting the dart and again surrounded by Dublin fans, and everyone's like, do you know what, you deserved it, and we're back. And you know, we're behind Galway the whole way. So I think, you know, we have a point to prove now. And I just feel like that squad, the depth in the squad, and just the kind of the camaraderie between them as well. Like they've been together now a good few years, and you can just see between them all that they've really clicked in the last year or two. So yeah, I'm going to go with the footballers.
They're so close, like the 2022 final. I was at that against Kerry in last year. Well, like it wasn't a great final to watch, but it was so close against Armagh. So they're so close, but at the same time, we talk so little, Arthur, about the Galway hurlers, and maybe it's because of the system up to now at this point of the year that we're so Munster heavy.
But they've not been great either. Like, no. To be fair, like they were fairly hammered that first day up with Kilkenny.
12 points, wasn't it?
It was an awful dispiriting watch, and they weren't great during the league. Now maybe it's building to it, but like it's funny, you're looking at the way the thing builds. If you were to lose the Leinster final this weekend, it's a very difficult path for whoever loses that.
Yeah.
You end up playing Tip, probably. And then you play the winners of Munster final in an All-Ireland semi-final. So, like, it's very, very difficult to know if you were losing the Leinster final, how you'd envision yourself winning or at least getting beyond the next two games to get into an All-Ireland final. It's just, you can't see it. Like, it's not. But I don't know. You never know. Like, I remember, it was funny enough, I was at the 2012 game. It's come up a lot this week.
Oh, yeah.
The big Galway win. But that feels a lifetime ago. It really does. Like, I don't know. Like, it's very hard to know where Galway are at all. I think that they tried an awful lot of players during the league, didn't they? I mean, it was up in 30 plus. Like,
yeah, I think when they first, what was the first squad? Was like when the first even training panel was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think it was good that he to blood a few players and get them out there in the league and get the experience of playing against these, like all these other teams. The only thing is, I will say, I did read some, like the local media, and it was interesting seeing from Kilkenny, they were like talking all about the semi-final against Clare last year and how Kilkenny want to right that wrong this year. And I kind of was like, oh, where's the mention of the Galway, the Leinster final? And then you're looking at the Galway side of it, and you know, they're really focused on it. And I guess they're wanting to right the wrongs of playing Kilkenny a couple of weeks ago. So like I would be saying Galway for this one, just because I think I love an underdog, and I love kind of someone going in at that way. And I just think maybe Galway have probably been working really hard now behind the scenes to, you know, to improve. And I think that's what Galway can do, is that you're saying there, like after that, they'll have two more games, and if they lose, and then it's kind of, you know, you're facing the Munster champions in the semi-final, which is obviously no easy feat. And we'll probably talk about that in a while. I just think that, you know, I wouldn't be like just saying Galway are gone just yet either. Now look, Kilkenny obviously are Kilkenny at the end of the day, so there's no denying that.
I do, like, and I'd have massive faith in Micheál Donoghue.
Absolutely.
I think he's amazing. I think that's a great, you talk about Lancaster, I think.
He was there 2017, wasn't he? He presided over that.
Sure, they were probably a better team in 2018. They were just kind of let themselves down a little bit in the final against Limerick to let such a wide gap emerge. But I'd have faith in him turning around, but I don't know, it just might seem too short, too quick this year. Cause it's just very difficult. Like, if you're looking realistically at them, how far you go. But like, if you play Kilkenny, and if you lose, then you're playing, so Tipperary, Limerick or Cork, and then probably Limerick or Cork, the other ones. You probably have to beat all three of those teams winning All-Ireland if you lose Kilkenny. If you beat Kilkenny, maybe it's a little bit different. They end up probably playing Limerick or Cork again in All-Ireland semi-final either way. But it's just, it's fun, like, it's hard to know because the last year has been fierce disappointing. Like, even the Shefflin years, really. Mm. I know, like, the kind of two All-Ireland semi-finals, but I'm not sure which one. The second one was fairly overwhelming in their defeat to Limerick that day. The first one was a bit closer, but it's, yeah, I don't know. It's very hard. It's very hard, though, coming through Leinster, just in terms of, like, knowing you can afford to almost lose a game or two. And you're like, you'll be fine.
It is. It feels like, for the Galway Hurlers, it was like, oh, your season starts now.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is a mad thing to say in June in the new system. When the old system would have been normal, but now it's like, we're so deep into Munster, everyone's kind of obsessed with it from a hurling perspective. And then it was like, oh yeah, Leinster are playing away as well. Keep an eye on their results. But now it's, okay, well, now they're on Croke Park on Sunday at 4 o'clock. You can watch it now. And then from that point, Galway will get going. But that's a weird dynamic, I guess, of hurling, because so few counties play it.
Yeah, and I think just the Munster Championship just really overtakes everything. And I was saying, like, I lived in Limerick for like 8 years, just only like,
oh yeah,
like a while ago. Yeah, like I was living there from 16 till what, a year and a half ago. And if that's, math might be wrong there, but in those years I was there when Limerick started this like upward trajectory, and I was there for every All Ireland final, and it was just like the whole Munster final. And I remember, like I was saying to you earlier, like the walk from City down to the Gaelic grounds was nearly, it was so exciting because all the crowds were just going over the bridges together, and all the jerseys and all the crack, and everywhere along the streets were lined, and you know, we'd all go in together, and then the whole way down, like the pubs and restaurants would have like marquees put out, and it just was always, it was such excitement that I think for a lot of people the Munster Championship just really encapsulates what hurling is and the spirit of hurling. Mm. And then I think the rivalry between the counties in Munster is just phenomenal. I think because they're all just so close and so intertwined, and you know, the players themselves either all went to school together, college together, or, you know, there's always these connections. And, you know, because I suppose the University of Limerick, Mary Eye, yeah, what was LIT, like they were just between Fitzgibbon and everything. It was just always such a, just, it just drew everyone in. And I think when you're living in that part of the country, it is, it's kind of like everything. Hurling is, especially in Limerick now with all the All-Irelands and all the Munster Championships.
Well, it's affecting the Munster rugby team because it's like hurling is the coolest sport in Limerick now.
Oh, it's and it's everywhere, and it's just youngsters and everyone's bought into it. I think, yeah, even if you aren't, like as I said, when I lived in the city centre, and for the homecomings as well for all the All-Irelands, it was just, actually even after Munster Championship games and the Gaelic rounds, everyone goes back into town afterwards. So there's a really good buzz, and you kind of, like even if I was away, would say a weekend that game was on, I'd nearly try, make sure I can time it to get back in because I didn't want to miss the crack that was going on around it. And everyone, as I said, has bought into it. Like every shop front, every business, they have the flags out, they have the bunting, and it's out all year round. It's not just for match day. So I think, you know, there's just that real ebb of excitement and buzz. But you have to wonder, is it because Semple Stadium? Is it because Gaelic grounds? Is it because Páirc Uí Chaoimh? You have these big stadiums that we all can get to. Whereas when you look at the likes of Galway and Kilkenny, we're going to Croke Park, which I know obviously it's Leinster. And I think, was it Joe Canning had spoken about this as well, about the stadium. And I just think you have to think logistically as well. And we should be putting these games, I think, in the kind of the stadiums that are in the towns and in the Midlands more, and bringing the crowds in there, because I think that just, because look, at the end of the day,
so it looks packed.
Yeah, well, not just that it looks packed, because it does create that buzz around the place as well. And I just think you have to think as well, I know the cost of living crisis, the cost for people going from Galway up to Dublin for a day to Croke Park, like it's extortionate nowadays. And if you're factoring in, if you're bringing children along as well, and I think people are starting to feel the pinch nowadays. And I think people are starting to choose, okay, which game will I go to? I can't go to all of them because the cost.
Well, it's really interesting. Like, so Galway are, you know, they're probably pound from the best dual county in the country. Like, it fascinates me looking at Galway. So is it east and south are hurling and west and north is football, generally speaking?
Yeah.
But I presume there's a bit of crossover, so you have fans of both. And if that's the case, like, you have to put aside a separate budget just to watch Galway this year if you're a fan of football and hurling. Like, would you rather that this Leinster final wasn't in Croke Park, that it was not necessarily closer west, but somewhere neutral?
Yeah, I think somewhere like, I don't know, Tullamore or Portlaoise, you know, there's stadiums that are easy to get to, accessible off the motorway as well. And I think it's also good for those towns to kind of, to get these crowds in as well and to see, you know, fans coming in, because again, well, economically it's great for places, but also I think it's good to move the sport around as well and let people see it, like get more eyes onto it as well. And I think it just brings that buzz and excitement. As I mentioned, when you're in Limerick City on a match day and the crowd in the Gaelic grounds, even if you're not there to watch the hurling, even if you don't know what's going on, you're still getting drawn into it. And you're still going to probably become part of it whether you like it or not. So I just think maybe there is an opportunity there to move games around as well. And yeah, as you mentioned there with Galway, like there are two different sides to it. And they're kind of growing up, I suppose, you're either one or the other, because depending on where you lived geographically. But I think maybe in more recent years, because Galway footballers and hurlers have both been there, thereabouts, there are more, is more of a crossover. But as you mentioned, like cost-wise, that's a lot of money to be going to games. Like I even find myself sometimes, I'm like, okay, that's the cost of the game. You're going probably going to stop for food on the way, fuel as well. And when you put it all in and add it all up, and you know, and they're long days as well to be travelling up to Dublin. It, you know, I know the motorway, it's like what, 2.5 hours or so. But if you just put it all to in, factor it all in, especially I think if you have young children or a full car going up.
Do we have any idea? Like, this is a big enough question now, in fairness, but like, why did hurling take off so much in Galway and not its surrounding counties? Like, why are Mayo not a dual county?
Yeah, I know. And it's funny, actually, I know a guy from home who moved up to Mayo for work and ended up playing hurling for Mayo. And like that, I was like, oh, wow. It's like, and it's not, it was just because I guess it's not really highlighted to us. And then when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's amazing. So I actually kind of used to go check the Mayo hurling results.
Yeah, I should say dual county as in like competitors for the All-Irelands.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously Galway have had successes over the years and, you know, like down through the decades, there's always been a Galway team there or thereabouts. So it is just interesting the way football is. It's just taken over. I suppose because Mayo are such a strong football side. You know, Leitrim and Roscommon as well, they've always been quite competitive. Sligo.
But Galway are too, though.
Yeah. It is kind of an unusual one.
There's an historical element to it. Like East Galway would have been massive GAA. It would have been one of the places where hurling was still a stronghold pre-GAA, like between Galway, Tipperary, that kind of area as well. So like there'd be a rich, rich history of it there, like going well, well back. But then you had, like, it's such a strange dynamic for them because you had decades and decades where Galway go straight into an All-Ireland semi-final every year.
Handy, wasn't it? Great times.
But it probably was, but it wasn't, like, because you'd get one game. You'd kind of get one go at it in the championship. But you'd be coming up against whoever out of, I suppose, Munster generally. But it's a good question, though. I don't know. It's probably one of those insurpassable things to bring other counties up to anywhere close to that standard.
Yeah,
it's just impossible. It's not. It's so difficult.
But is it then a case of then they start maybe winning that it kind of transfers over? But like no more than we're saying when Connacht that time when they won the Pro 12, there was a massive boost in rugby support from around the province because a lot more youngsters probably started playing. But also, I think I noticed in years as well. Like we would have come from like a rugby family, and my brother was sent to a boarding school that was a rugby boarding school because, you know, that was the sport my father wanted him to play. So he was sent there. And at the time, I'm not sure there was much rugby where we were from, but now I think that nearly every couple of parishes, there's a rugby team of some sort. So it's more accessible to people. So is an accessibility thing. As I mentioned earlier, like I don't come from a predominantly GAA family, but when I lived in Spittal in 98 when we won the football, and I thought this was the best fun ever. That was my first, I guess, taste of GAA and winning, and it was brilliant. And then I moved to Ardrahan, which is hurling country. And then when I moved there, I remember when 2001, when Galway won the football, I can barely remember that time now. I was quite young as well, but it just probably wasn't in around us because there wasn't football in the area. So it's just kind of interesting, like, is it that it's not there? And like I said, when I moved to Ardrahan, then I think I was 10 going on 11. And I started playing camogie because it was the only sport that was available for girls. And also, I didn't really know many people in the parish and I wanted to make friends. So I thought, well, might as well just play this sport that I absolutely know very little about. And that's how that started. So again, is it up to kind of bring... And then it's hard for parents because kids now do so much sport these days and so many activities that it's hard to kind of cover everything. So I guess you kind of just choose maybe what's on your doorstep.
And success has a huge bearing on it. Like, because... As I was saying, I think I've mentioned it before, like a lot of family from Limerick, but like they'll all have kids that were born in the last 10, 15 years, even stretching that back. So they've kind of just grown up watching Limerick win. And it's kind of just a case now where it's like, sure, it's just, this is what you do every summer. That it's kind of, you follow it and then it's kind of, presumably then you play it and you do everything else and it just becomes so enshrined in kind of your day to day. It probably does just success begets success in that kind of way and it just begets involvement. Which is very hard then to kind of, because I don't know, you'll have a good idea of it from, I mean, Cork, for all its the variety, it must be stretched at the same time, just because it has like traditions and different ones that are, like, you could, like, you could frame Cork as a county, like X county, in terms of it's a football county, it's a rugby county, it's everything, you know.
That's amazing. Somebody, we, as Ryan O'Dwyer looks at me from the production basket there, like, we have the 1990 record there to be broken, and no one's taken up, no one's taken up the mantle of the double. But it's true, like, Arthur makes a very salient point there, that Cork is a good symbol of off the ball. We do with
everything.
We do a bit of everything. Like, you can make him do anything you want to Cork. Well, to a high level.
I'm probably just not lucky. I'm just unlucky that I didn't move to Cork at some stage.
You are. That's still ahead of you. Welcome to Off the Ball Breakfast Show, Megan. This is from guest legend, or sorry, should I say fan legend, Dermot Keenan on YouTube. What else do we have here for you? Great guest, speaks really well. Your friend's burner account's there, alive and well. This is
Ma'am,
Michael.
Stop.
Michael on YouTube. And plenty of more comments coming in. We actually have loads of news to get to too. So the Ronaldo effect in Portugal is still alive and well, Megan. 40 years of age, scores last night.
I was in my hotel room last night, and I'd say now I was hoping that the room next door were probably like, what is going on in there? I think it's just amazing. He's such a legend. I know he has the bank account to be able to, like, probably have access to the best fitness, health and everything, but it's the fact that the desire is still there at 40 years old, and he has a family and a young family at that. He's moved a lot, you know. I just think he is phenomenal, and I think anyone that begrudges Ronaldo, I don't know, it must be a bit of jealousy that he's still that active at 40 and scoring goals. And I think is it like 937?
Yeah, I think you're bang on, actually. Yeah,
goals in his career. Like, he is just amazing, and I think, like, you know, we saw a lot of the videos yesterday from before the game, and like, everyone wants to see Ronaldo. It doesn't matter where you're from. It's everyone wants to see Ronaldo, and it was all cheers and the crowds were all like mad to see him. And then, of course, after he scored the goal, they were chanting Ronaldo and singing about him through the stadium. And like, it is kind of that, like, you're watching Portugal going, God, I wonder. I wonder if Ronaldo get a goal, because, you know, it's just what you think about. And then he did, and sure, the place absolutely erupted, because I think it was Ritz got, I'm saying that wrong now, excuse my German pronunciations, got his goal, and then it was like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then suddenly Ronaldo got the second goal, yeah, in Portugal, to secure the win. Now, I know you were questioning it, though.
It's about a yard offside. The guy has your wave in his pocket, like, do what he wants.
Are you begrudging him?
No. I mean, I look at him as a special case study too, like, you know, I mean, look, like, I grew up as a Manchester United supporter, so there was a version of Cristiano Ronaldo that I loved. Like, it was amazing when he joined the club. I don't have to give everyone the history of Ronaldo. Everyone's aware of it, but he, like, all the tape around the ankles and the silver boots, and he was just this tricky winger who Ruud van Nistelrooy used to be so frustrated by because he never crossed the ball in. To this guy now who, like, his teammates have to give him the ball to have a shot. Like, I was laughing last night, watching on TV, and Dave McIntyre, our old colleague on commentary, saying Ronaldo has the ball, he's probably going to shoot. He was not in a shooting position, and Dave was completely correct. Like, he just pulls it in his right, whips it, takes the deflection, goes out for corners. The corner's not given. So he still has this ability to set up a shooting opportunity for himself.
Yeah.
But the man is in it for himself and then some. So I have two very contrasting opinions of Cristiano Ronaldo. He's the biggest freak of nature in football history. Never seen anyone like him. His dedication is quite frankly sickening. Like, he's 40 years old. Yeah. He should be long gone from the game, and he looks phenomenal. He looks 30. He's funnily enough gotten rid of that side of his game that he used to have with all the skill and tricks. He actually does very little really on the ball, but he has this amazing ability to score goals, and ultimately, like, there are very few players in the world that can do it. So I have a huge amount of respect for what he can do, but I'm kind of fascinated by him, and I'm not sure if I like that fascination or not.
Do you think, though, maybe he's kind of almost leading the way for not just football players, but for, like, all sports, to show that you can play at an older age if you actually kind of put in the work and the dedication? Now, again, I know he has the bank balance to be able to pay for probably every sort of health hack and whatnot, but yeah, it's more so the mindset to still want to be there at that age and still play at that professional level. Like, he's nothing to prove to anybody. He has made his money. He can go and live wherever he wants and have a lovely retirement life and probably buy an island, yeah, with his own private beach, but he doesn't want to. So do you think maybe he's almost kind of getting behind, like, giving everyone motivation to say, do you know what, I'm in, like, my 30s now, I'm pushing on, but you know what, I can still stay here?
No. No, like, because he's not relatable in any way. Like, his dedication is, like, he's just ruined it for everyone else. Like people look at Wayne Rooney now and are like, oh, what could have been Wayne? Because, you know, like, he was, like, hand in hand with Ronaldo, joined the club a year after Ronaldo, and there was a point in time where it's like, geez, like, who's the better player there, Rooney or Ronaldo?
Yeah.
And now it's because of what Ronaldo's achieved, just blows Rooney out of the water completely. And, it, like, you look at Rooney now and, like even their conditioning at their age and for various reasons, you're like, oh. And he just, everyone that plays with Ronaldo, it just look basically looks like they don't look after themselves well enough. Because Ronaldo is just kind of this perfect specimen. I don't know, like I thought we'd long stopped talking about him at this stage. And in fairness to the guy, they play against Germany last night and he scores the winner. Whatever about the legitimacy of the goal or not, and it was a tap-in, he was still there to put the ball in the net. So I'm very conflicted when it comes to Ronaldo.
Great skin as well. You seen his skin?
His skin routine must be off the charts, Megan.
I'm kind of there going, I want to know his skin routine. I want to know his... No, I don't want to know his morning routine because I'm not really a morning person, even though I know I'm here this morning early. But I'd like love to see it, but I feel like it's, as you said, it's probably very unattainable. It's probably like... I doubt he drinks 3 cups of coffee before he gets out of bed.
Oh, I don't think he has caffeine at all, Megan.
Really?
I'd say it'd be bad for your skin for that reason.
God, I might have to cut back in that zone.
you want to aspire to Ronaldo. What else do we have today? So we only have a couple of minutes left here. But Rory McIlroy, in the news this week for the driver situation, the leaking of the incorrect driver, the regulations around it. Scotty Scheffler was also done, but it was leaked about McIlroy. He wasn't happy with the two journalists. But I thought Rory McIlroy would enjoy himself or be enjoying himself a lot more than he has been since he completed the full set and won the Masters. But he has talked in the morning papers this morning about a lack of motivation.
Yeah.
And again, I thought he'd still be running on fumes now and adrenaline, but he seems to already feel that post-success blues that people talk about. He kind of seems to have it.
Yeah, and I kind of felt a bit sad when I read that because I guess, well, like, again, what, like, he's got really nothing to prove to us. And maybe, like, I think we saw after he won how emotionally drained he was, and you could see, like, that when he was walking back out through the crowds, I was getting emotional watching him. And I just found like you could just see that it almost took everything out of him. Mm. And I think to reach it and to finally get there, I think he was like, wow, I've finally got, it's like, I suppose, you know, you go hike a mountain, he reached the top and then suddenly it was like, all right, now I have to go back down. And I just think maybe, like, yeah, I think I was surprised too, because I think we all thought, oh, now this is spurring him on. But I suppose we have to, like, he's been around since, God, I think actually, am I the same age as him, or is he actually younger than me? And he's been around for so long, and I feel like he must be, like, it must be exhausting. And I guess maybe, like, could he have taken a break afterwards? Yeah. Are they allowed to? Like, should he have just maybe taken some time? Like, we've seen with Carla Ward, like, some of the Irish women's players, like Katie McCabe, won't be traveling to America. She's taking a break, and a few players are because she doesn't want, Carla said she doesn't want burnout.
Yes.
Like, should he have taken a long-term, like, break for himself just to give him that chance to, I guess, not find the love for it, because obviously he loves the sport, but I can't, like I said, I haven't played at that professional level. But you do have to wonder, is it, like, you know, we all need a break from life every now and then. We all need to take breaks from our working days and everything. So, yeah, maybe he should have given himself a nice suspiog little break.
Just one more story here before we head to the break. Paul O'Connell named his side for Ireland's tour this summer. So the 5th of July, they play Georgia away. And then a week later, they play Portugal. Probably the big news is Craig Casey, the Munster scrum half, is named as the captain for the tour. Probably the big notable omission is Tom Farrell. He's not in the squad, so people are questioning that. Mm. Otherwise, it's a mix of a kind of a... there's a bit of an element of experiment to it and some seniority too. But if you look around the contenders of who else could have been captain, it's probably not a bad shout. Like Ryan Baird, maybe. Finlay Beatham's the oldest in the group, I think, at 31. So it's quite experimental. Probably the big problem is open side blanker. There's no real depth there after Josh van der Fleer. So there was a good few notable omissions here in the squad too. But Alex Kendellan got in there in that position, I think, as a specialist in that position. But there's no John Haddon, it's Scott Penny or Will Connors, for example. But look, we're going to have plenty of rugby on the show tomorrow, so we will get stuck into the Irish squad then. But for now, OTB Breakfast is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Rugby.
When you come across a gem, you keep him. We talk about Brees Toulon. I don't look upon him as a player. It's very rare, you could say, in modern sport, really, that he's a good friend.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.